signs in the heaven. Please give your undivided attention as we call upon Brother Mac. Brother Mac.
Good evening. That is loud. All right, good. Good evening, dear brothers and sisters in Christ Jesus our Lord. It's good to be here in Arkansas. It's a little bit interesting that we haven't had any promised rain yet, because for Floridians, we don't know what rain looks like anymore, and haven't seen any since October of 2016, and we're here, and it was supposed to rain all week, but I'm starting to think it's me. There's a lot of interesting things happening in the world right now. So my assignment for this evening is to talk about some of those current events that are taking place in the world. In Luke chapter 21, in the Olivet Prophecy there, verse 24 talks to us about the times of the Gentiles when Jerusalem's downtrodden. And then verse 25, which is, in my mind, if you remember, a bit of a preamble to Matthew's version that sees the Son of Man coming in power and great glory, says, there shall be signs in the sun, and in the moon, and in the stars, and upon the earth, distress of nations, and perplexity, and the sea, and the waves roaring, men's heart failing them for fear, and for looking after those things which are coming on the earth. For the powers of heaven shall be shaken. And then shall they see the Son of Man coming in a cloud with power and great glory. And when these things begin to come to pass, then look up and lift up your heads, for your redemption draweth nigh. So we certainly have a lot of things and a lot of reasons, a lot of things happening in the world that certainly cause us to contemplate that it is time, and has been time for quite some time, to lift up our heads, because our redemption does draw nigh. Now I want to say something about current events. There are a lot of times that people may come to me and, Mac, what do you think about something that's just happened? And I sometimes I don't really answer what I think. And I think that we would do well as Christadelphians, while we can be very excited about what we see happening, we can speculate on what a current event means. I think sometimes it takes a while of reflection, and maybe even a few weeks or a few months to pass before things can become clear to us. I think too often in Christadelphian history, there have been some Christadelphians who allow their interpretation of Bible prophecy to be influenced by what is the current event of the day. And we need to be careful of that. So there's a couple of introductory comments to make here that I think are very important. On the overhead, we have a depiction of the image that Nebuchadnezzar saw. And we know that this image is a blueprint for Bible prophecy. I won't spend a lot of time on this. Young people, think back to every class you've ever heard on the image at this moment. Think about it as being a blueprint. Remember, what Daniel saw has never yet existed. He didn't see just a head of gold and tell Nebuchadnezzar, this head of gold is you. He saw a complete man head to toe. And we need to always be thinking that this image is going to stand complete head to toe. And as I look at current events, How is what I am seeing affecting what I know is going to happen? We also have the very profound prophecy of Ezekiel chapter 38, which gives us a great host that we know of a surety in the last days is going to come upon the land of Israel. Now, on the chart, most of you know what a world map looks like, young and old, right? We've got listed there the country of Spain and brown, and France and Germany and Italy and Greece and many other countries. And we've got titles there speaking of those individuals as the tribes of Gomer in Spain and France and Germany. We've got the land of Magog and many of these Eastern European peoples spoken of. Moscow, Meshach, Rosh, Tubal, Tagarma. We see an awful lot in Ezekiel 38, then that's very important. It is critical when we look at current events that we always remember what is the blueprint to Bible prophecy. And if we do that, then maybe it'll be helpful and we'll find it easier to see what is happening and why is it that we should be encouraged and maybe speculate a little bit more accurately as to what is happening. All right. Let's talk about some things that we've seen taking place. Just last Sunday, I think that we had a really interesting event. We're going to see it repeated next Sunday in that France seems to be going through some political upheaval. The ruling party has already been basically assured of being out of power. The current president is not going to get reelected. And we are left between a very right-wing candidate in Le Pen and a centrist candidate in Macron. And I feel assured in my own mind that what we are seeing happening throughout Europe is very interesting because the people are rebelling against their governments. We're seeing a lot of humanistic spirit rise up throughout the world. We know from the blueprint of Bible prophecy that France is destined to align herself with Russia. We are assured of that. How do we get to that point to where they're close to being willing to come with Russia and invade the Middle East? Well, France has been a country that has been plagued with several very devastating terrorist attacks. We remember back to January 7, 2015 and the Charlie Hebdo attacks that left 12 dead. We remember back to November 2013, the Paris nightclub and stadium attacks that took place on a single night, and I think there was a restaurant attack that night and left 130 dead. The Nice attacks in July 24, 2016, which a truck plowed through a crowd of people and killed 84. And then most recently, on April 20th of this year, a police shooting, I think, was destined to have an impact on the French elections. And I think will have an impact. What that impact is, I'm not so sure. I think we're going to have to wait and see. Is a far-right candidate going to be put in power of France that is willing to leave the European Union? Well, I don't see France leaving that union. Nonetheless, there's been a great upheaval. The people of Europe are upset with their government letting in foreigners into their country that they view as terrorists. It's a sentiment that is something very akin to what we experience in this country. The one thing we know is that in the Apocalypse in chapter 16, let's turn there, verses 13 and 14, we know that the frog-like spirit, is a great catalyst in the Armageddon conflict. Revelation 16, verses 13 and 14, and I saw three unclean spirits like frogs come out of the mouth of the dragon and out of the mouth of the beast and out of the mouth of the false prophet. For they are the spirits of devils working miracles which go forth unto the kings of the earth and of the whole world to gather them to the battle of the great day of God Almighty. The frog spirits are going to be critical in that gathering into the Armageddon conflict when we read these verses. Now, we know that the French Revolution of 1789 greatly changed the face of Europe. The Jerusalem Post had an interesting article that I read just yesterday, and the article was entitled A Second French Revolution. And I did my best to try to save this to where I could read it because it was too long to copy word for word. And I, sure enough, I knew that was going to happen to me. I'm not going to be able to bring it up. Or am I? Ah. Okay. Really interesting article in the Jerusalem Post in which the writer, who was a staff writer for the Jerusalem Post, theorize that what is going to happen next Sunday in France is going to dramatically affect the continent of Europe for many years to come. And I think it's something that bears watching for us as well. It is clear that just as we can go to our jobs today, we go to school, we pay attention to what's happening in the news in our country, that this country is bitterly divided, that France is becoming the same way. The frog spirits are really rousing up the passions of the people. And I believe France is on the precipice of a great change. So much so that they're going to find their goals aligned more with Russia. Will they continue to be plagued by terrorist attacks? Possibly so. Will they be willing to participate more so with Putin and the Russian government to get rid of this scourge that is affecting Europe and come into the Middle East and settle the question once and for all? Perhaps so. But Revelation 16 tells us that this is as a result of the frog-like spirits. It is interesting that when we look at the frog as a symbol in Scripture, we see it used here in the Apocalypse, and we know it's also associated with Egypt. In Egyptian lore, the god Nu was symbolized by a frog head, and he was the Egyptian god of chaos. And I find that very interesting because I think chaos is about ready to hit Europe and has been hitting them. I think we would do well to pay attention to the French election next Sunday and see what happens. I personally don't expect Le Pen to win, but we don't know what the Elohim has in mind right now. I think the centrist candidate will remain, but I think the sentiment of the French people has been awakened, and they are not going to stand by much longer. What about Germany? Another very important country in the Gomer-Gogian Confederacy. What is it that will happen to this people that will align them with Russia to invade the Middle East? Well, I think that we see that there's an effect that is happening as well in Germany because of terrorist attacks that I think is greatly changing the landscape politically of that nation as well. Merkel is on thin ice. And why is she on thin ice? There's a great there is a great number of her constituency, of the German people, that are very upset about the influx of refugees into their country, that they are terrified are only going to create more terror attacks. We had the December 19th attack just this past year, in which a truck was driven into a shopping area that was set up for Christmas shoppers. 2016 in Germany saw 7 terror attacks. 7 terror attacks. Once again, the people are very upset, even in Germany. You know, we pay attention to the controversies, I think, sometimes in this country, and maybe we don't realize what is going on elsewhere. You know, we're worried about terrorism in this country. It's greatly affected the politics of this country. Probably the single most point, the reason we have the president we do have, is because of the fear of terror. How is that shaping other countries? Germany, as well as France, is going to end up very shortly compelled to participate with Putin in his aims. What will be the common bond? Why is it that Russia says they are currently in the ancient territory of the Seleucid Empire? Well, they claim it's because of all of the Islamic radical fighters that are coming out of that territory and affecting their nation in Chechnya and other places. I think this may become a common rally cry for all of these nations. And you know, it just seems that the ISIS fighters are so dedicated and blinded that they're just foolish enough to cut their own throats and continue to attack Europe, and to the point where they will be motivated to come and wipe them off the face of the earth. We certainly know from Bible prophecy as well, and Ezekiel 38 makes it very clear, that economic motives will come into play. Economic motives will come into play. Europe is undergoing a very critical change that is going to affect their economies. The EU is becoming a disaster. Britain's exit is going to throw the whole thing into chaos. The fact that even France is considering possibly leaving itself is very interesting. And in Germany, they're concerned about the EU as well. And what are they concerned about? Their power. Their standing. They've been running the EU, and particularly they're very, very upset with talks going on in Turkey, and they want Turkey nowhere near their economic union. Terrorism, the economy, all of these things I think will come into play. Well, we talked about Turkey. Let's talk about Turkey a little bit more. What an enigma when you look at this particular country. Where are their friendships? Where are their allies? You know, there was a time a decade ago that they were the friend of Israel. There was a time that they were without question an ally of the West. An uneasy one, but an ally. But what's taken place in this particular country? November 24, 2015, Turkey shot down a Russian jet that had strayed from Syrian territory over their airspace. Now, Putin and Erdogan famously met about that and patched things up. Do you believe that? I don't. You know, Putin is playing the long game. He is a master chess player when it comes to the world of politics. And I think he is biding his time with Mr. Erdogan. and sees an individual that he can use to get his own gains, because this is a man full of himself and foolishness. July 15th, 2016, we had an attempted coup of Erdogan. Or was it? Intelligence services around the world widely believe that that coup that supposedly took place last summer was all organized by Erdogan to solidify his own power and his own standing. 2016 of December saw the Russian ambassador murdered on national TV in Turkey. There's a pattern here of instability developing in this nation that is going to be very concerning throughout all of Europe, throughout Russia, and even to the Middle East. Even today, whose side is Turkey on in the Syrian conflict? They're on their own side. Their goals are not the goals of Putin. Their goals don't align with Syria's, what's left of their national forces. Their goals don't align with the U.S. They're playing their own game. And in world politics, when you are playing your own game, you are destined to be squeezed out. On April 16th of this year, 2017, which was just a couple of Sundays ago, the people of Turkey voted to give Erdogan full power over the country of Turkey. He can now dissolve the parliament if he wants. He can dissolve the courts if he wants. He answers to no one. What he says goes. He is, in effect, the current dictator of Turkey. And it has Europe panicked. They are concerned about the financial implications. And it has the West also very, very concerned. This was posted on many of the Turkish news websites just a couple of Sundays ago. I'm not saying that Erdogan is like the man on the left, but they do bear a very strong resemblance to one another. It is interesting that both of these individuals seem to be extremely self-centered, have ambition, strong ambition. They want power, and Erdogan is after it. Much like Mr. Adolf Hitler wanted to develop a world power, Erdogan sees a rising again of the Ottoman Turkish Empire. I don't think that that will happen. And we know it's not going to happen. Daniel chapter 11 verse 40 tells us very clear that there is an end coming for this particular country. And I think when we look at the craziness that is happening politically there, we're seeing the seeds being sown. Why is it, brethren, that all of Europe will be so okay with Russia coming against the nation of Turkey and eliminating it? Well, I think we're seeing the developments of that in this man, Erdogan. In Daniel chapter 11, in verse 36, the conversation turns from speaking of parties known as the King of the North and the King of the South to simply a king who would do according to his will. But in verse 36, to keep this as short as I can, the conversation shifts to the power that will be centered in Constantinople. So that when we get to verse 40, we read, "And at the time of the end shall the king of the south push at him," the king of verse 36, the power of Constantinople. And the king of the north shall come against him, the power in Constantinople, like a whirlwind, with chariots and with horsemen and with many ships, and he shall enter into the countries and shall overflow and pass over and into the glorious land. I think Erdogan is the man we have waited for that is going to make it okay in the minds of all of Europe. Yep, let's do this. We're with you, Mr. Putin. Let's overrun Turkey. Let's get into the Middle East. Let's stop all of this nonsense. What are some of the results that have taken place from this strained relationship that is developing? Some of you may have seen this off of Debka. Really interesting development. There was a point in time that Turkey basically told the United States Air Force that your Incirlik base, we don't want you flying in and out of there anymore. This is our airspace. You're in our country. You can keep your air base, but you can't use it. The result has been that the United States Air Force has been evacuating Incirlik and moving its air base, and I can't pronounce some of these names, to Tabqa. I probably didn't pronounce that right at all. But the Western influence of the United States is disappearing out of Turkey. Why is this important? Do you think Russia and Europe are going to be so thrilled about overflowing Turkey if there is a United States air base with nuclear weapons there? But now that they're moving out of that region, it seems to open the door a little bit. Interesting, last week, Mr. Trump, who is interesting, encouraged Erdogan to bring 30,000 troops to Raqqa to kind of take over and to bring some stability to the area. And I think that was a way of the art of the deal, trying to reach out and negotiate. Do you think Putin would really feel pretty good about that? 30,000 Turkish troops in the Raqqa region. I don't think that that's going to work out too well. But Trump has learned, I think, even with the man he is dealing with, because some things that have happened recently certainly show that, you know, what is taking place there is not going to work, and Turkey does not want anything to do with the West. And then I wrote a note on there that I meant to be on another slide. You can keep that in your own thoughts. Sometimes that's what happens when you are talking about current events and things are changing so much daily that you're changing your notes right and left to try to fit new information that is coming in. But let's move even further to the south. Let's talk about Syria. The civil war in Syria continues. It's been going on for quite a while right now since the Arab Spring arose, and the people revolted, and revolt subsided in some countries, but not in Syria. It has continued, and it has raged on. It is very interesting to note and to pay attention to the fact that we are dealing with a territory that is a large portion of the ancient Seleucid dominion. I am not trying to ignore the fact that Turkey was an important part of that dominion. But let's remember where the capital of the King of the North, when it was under the Seleucid Empire, was. It was in Antioch, almost in what is wrapped up in the modern-day Syria today, though it still is in Turkey. We have watched, brethren, before our eyes in just a few years, Russian troops, Russian naval bases, Russian air force bases develop in the ancient territory of the King of the North. And I know pretty much all of us have been paying attention to this and watching it very closely. It is a tremendous event for us to have seen. Russia is a powerful country militarily. They could have come in and settled this civil war in much in the way of a quick fashion that the Iraqi war was over much quicker. Putin doesn't want this war over, I would suggest. His long-range plans are served much better if this Syrian civil war continues on for a while to come until he's ready. If the Syrian civil war becomes settled, the political situation in Turkey would probably settle as well. That's not to his liking. He likes this turmoil. He'll see the civil war continue until he is ready to make his move. We have all seen the things that have happened in the news. We have seen the drastic and terrible chemical attack that happened a few weeks ago. We have seen the response by the government of this country in destroying the air base that launched that attack, the Sharat Air Base in Shinshar. And as I listed on the previous slide, and I meant to be on this one, what has been the result of that? Did the Syrians learn their lesson and everything's fine? They're not going to do that again? Probably not. And where are they storing all their jets now? Well, they're on the Russian air base. Is that going to be a place that Putin is going to be in control? Certainly so. Is it a place where Trump probably is going to strike if there's another chemical attack? Probably not. Russia is more and more asserting her position. And more than one brother has already commented that we have a very important prophecy in Isaiah 17 that may be working out before our eyes. Let's turn there. All right, let's read a little bit of this here. Isaiah 17. The burden of Damascus. Behold, Damascus is taken away from being a city, and it shall be a ruinous heap. We'll pause for just a second. Only overhead, there is a picture of one section of Damascus that was taken on February 2013, and then on July of 2013. Damascus certainly seems to be on its way to being a ruinous heap. I am not by any means suggesting that Damascus is there yet. That's not the case. But I think we're seeing events play out that are going to bring Isaiah 17 to a conclusion. Now, there was a time in my own spiritual development that I probably looked at Isaiah 17 as being a bit more of a post-adventual fulfillment prophecy, and I no longer think that. And it's because, not of what the current event we see, but my good friend Brother Al one day sat me down and said, let's read the whole chapter together. And he convinced me. And let's continue to read. The cities of Aror are forsaken. They shall be for flocks, which shall lie down, and none shall make them afraid. The fortresses also shall cease. From Ephraim in the kingdom from Damascus, and the remnant of Syria, they shall be as the glory of the children of Israel, saith Yahweh of hosts. Now, pay attention to verse 4. Why is it that Isaiah 17, speaking about the burden of Damascus, suddenly changes into a direction that appears to be a tangent, but it's not? It's trying to tell us something, brethren, that one event is concurrent, maybe as a result of the other. And in that day it shall come to pass that the glory of Jacob shall be made thin. Well, that verse alone proves to me that Isaiah 17 is not post-adventual, but pre-adventual. Pre-adventual. Damascus will become a ruinous heap in the same era in which the glory of Jacob will be made thin. The fatness of his flesh shall wax lean, And it shall be as when the harvestman gathereth the corn and reapeth the ears with his arm. And it shall be as he that gathereth ears in the valley of Rephaim, gleaning grapes, shall be left in it in the shaking of an olive tree, two or three berries in the top of the uppermost bough, four or five in the outmost fruitful branches. Therefore saith Yahweh, God of Israel, at that day shall a man look to his Maker, and his eyes shall have respect to the Holy One of Israel, and he shall not look to the altars, the works of his hands, neither shall respect that which his fingers have made, either the groves or the images. In that day shall his strong cities be as a forsaken bough, and an uppermost branch, which they left because of the children of Israel, and there shall be desolation. Because thou hast forgotten the God of thy salvation, and hast not been mindful of the rock of thy strength, therefore shalt thou plant pleasant plants, and shall set it with strange slips. In that day shalt thou make thy plant to grow, and in the morning shalt thou make thy seed to flourish, but the harvest shall be at heap in the day of grief and of desperate sorrow. Woe to the multitude of many people which make a noise like the noise of the seas, and the rushing of nations that make a rushing like the rushing of mighty waters. The nations shall rush like the rushing of many waters, but God shall rebuke them, and they shall flee far off, and shall be chased as the chaff of the mountain before the wind, and like a rolling thing before the whirlwind. And behold, at eventide trouble, and before the morning he is not. This is the portion of them that spoil us, and the lot of them that rob us. When we read the 17th chapter of Isaiah, I think we see something that directly should encourage each and every one of us to lift up our heads. Our redemption draweth nigh. The destruction of Damascus seems inevitable. It seems as if it is only a short time away, doesn't it? On Thursday morning, Israel struck at a Hezbollah base near the Damascus airport. They didn't admit to it, but it's pretty clear it was done by Israel. Also on Thursday, a Syrian-Iranian Hezbollah force began movement toward the Golan Heights. Israel will never let Damascus remain unscathed if this force attacks the Golan. Now think about this for a moment, and let's be really clear, and let's not let any moment of confusion come in. It's this Bet Jin Road that these Syrian, Iranian Hezbollah forces are on, and they seem to be moving to the toward the Golan and towards Al-Qunitra, don't know how to pronounce that correctly. Now, there are some brethren who I think, because they have abandoned the traditional view of Christadelphian prophecy, may see this as strictly, or this is leading to an Arab-Israeli conflict. We cannot forget who's in control right now of that country. Is Assad capable of ruling this country if it's but himself? Who's a puppet? Who's in charge? The Russian bear is in charge, along with its companion, Persia. They're in charge. The Syrian forces are pawns. It'll be interesting to watch what happens over the next days and weeks. Also Friday, Israel shot down a drone that was coming over the Golan border with a Patriot missile. You know, we think back to the Iraqi conflict that took place and the Scud missiles that were launched on Israel and Patriot missiles that were launched then and the success rate that they had. Well, they hit a couple of those Scud missiles and a couple of them landed and did some damage. You think those systems haven't improved? But certainly they have. They can take out a drone at this point in time. Things have improved. But we're seeing things that are leading to a very dangerous situation for the nation of Israel. And I think we're seeing a hint of how Putin is going to continually arrange things. He's going to use his patsies, his puppet forces, to keep probing at this conflict, to stir up trouble. Is it his goal, ultimately, not only to have Gomer and all his bands ready to get rid of the Islamic scourge, but let's settle the Jerusalem question as well? Is it to his advantage to promote trouble and conflict in these regions? Certainly it is. And we know that Benjamin Netanyahu is not a man easily pushed around. We're dealing with two very strong-willed men in those two. And we need to pay attention to how this is going to play out. Let's talk about another country. Let's talk about Jordan. King Abdullah II. I think most people would agree is a friend to the West. He's an enemy of ISIS. When the Islamic forces captured some of his fighter pilots and burned them alive, what was his response? Well, supposedly he hopped in a helicopter and joined in the fight, right? You look at this guy and pick my words carefully. He looks like a pretty bad dude, doesn't he? But this is an interesting country in an interesting situation. So far, King Abdullah has been a master at staying out of the fray, but somewhere in the middle. He's not like Turkey, who's playing his own game, but he is one who's trying to weave his way through a very dangerous minefield. He has been a survivor of the Arab Spring. He's an extremely educated individual. But we know from prophecy what the fate of this country is. Interestingly, he sat next to Donald Trump when Donald Trump took action on the Syrians for their chemical attack, and I have no doubt was probably briefed in what was to come, and probably said, I'm with you, Donald, go ahead, this needs to be done. But he's in a dangerous position. He can't remain out of the conflict, but he wants to, I think. What does Daniel 11 say that's very interesting? Alright, let's try to put a couple of pieces together here for a moment. I think we're seeing a man that he's trying to stay out of the crosshairs of everybody. In Daniel chapter 11, we know that verse 41 says of Russia's invasion that he shall enter into the glorious land. Many shall be overthrown. But these shall escape out of his hand, Edom and Moab and the chief of the children of Ammon. Well, that's only going to be a temporary reprieve for this Jordanian king. He will initially escape the devastation of the invader. But he will not remain unscathed. What does Isaiah 63 tell us? Is Edom scheduled for that desolation and that turmoil to come upon him? He's trying to weave this minefield and keep his country out of the crosshairs, but it's not going to happen. But while he is a man that views himself as being a friend of the Palestinian cause, he does not present himself as the enemy of Israel either. Remember, his father was very quick to kick the PLO out of his country. Initially, Jordan was a haven for the PLO terrorist, but King Hussein I saw what was to come and got those radicals out of his country. Isaiah 16 tells us, and let's think about Daniel 11, about what's to come. Send ye the lamb to the ruler of the land, from Selah to the wilderness and to the mount of the daughter of Zion. For it shall be that as a wandering bird cast out of the nest, so the daughters of Moab shall be at the fords of Arnon. Take counsel, execute judgment. Make thy shadow as the night in the midst of the noonday. Hide the outcast. Bewray not him that wandereth. Let mine outcast dwell with thee, Moab, and be thou a covert to them from the face of the spoiler. For the extortioner is at an end. The spoiler ceaseth. The oppressors are consumed out of the land. Jordan seems to be certainly setting themselves up on account of this conflict to be that covert for those who will flee from Israel, from the Gogian host, as it initially comes down upon Turkey and then through the glorious land into Egypt. But much like Isaiah 16 depicts, the pride of Moab has to be subjected. Verse 6, we have heard of the pride of Moab. He is very proud, even of his haughtiness and his pride and his wrath. But his lies shall not be so. Therefore shall Moab howl for Moab. Everyone shall howl. Trouble is indeed coming for this nation as well. Let's talk about Iran for just a few minutes. Prophetically, Persia. They've been unusually quiet since Donald Trump has come into office. And I think this is by design. The famous Ahmadinejad wanted to retake his role as president. But the clerics and those who rule said, no, we don't want you. Iran is trying to seize its position of power, working with Russia very carefully. But I think that they have seen that there are some things that they need to back off on. Are they provoking the U.S. as much as they were previously? Doesn't seem to be so. When's the last time you heard of an Iranian ship coming up to a U.S. war vessel in the Straits of Hormuz and causing the trouble that they were previously? I have a feeling that they're concerned that, well, Obama was pretty easy to intimidate, but Trump's going to tell them to shoot him out of the water. But it doesn't change the fact that this Shiite nation, Iran, is working behind the scenes in Iraq and in Syria. They are feared by all the Sunni nations. Saudi Arabia particularly is concerned about a nuclear Iran. Brethren, the Arabs have always had problems with one another. The Shiites always hated the Sunnis, and the Sunnis always hated the Shiites. For years, those Christadelphians who have talked about how all the Arabs roundabout are going to get together and wipe Israel off the face of the earth, they have not understood the great divisions that there are in the Arab community. We are seeing those things play out today. The 2017 Arab Summit, which was recently held, saw 15 resolutions passed by all nations in attendance. Every one of those 15 resolutions concerned Iran. Not one resolution concerned the borders of the nation of Israel. This is the first time that has ever happened. The first time that the Arabs get together for their yearly summit and they don't have any resolution to pass about in Israel. It's remarkable. Are the Elohim working behind the scenes to get the Sunnis and Shiites in the right place? Without question. You know, what does Isaiah tell us about the wilderness of Arabia and how beautiful it's going to become? What does Ezekiel 38 tell us about Sheba and Dedan and their role in standing up against the Gogian invader? Things have been changing for some time, and it's been a very remarkable year. Oh, I didn't have that picture up a second ago, or did I? I didn't have something clicked on. Well, there you are. I've been looking here, not there. I'm not sure what I just clicked on. Let's go on to the next slide. Libya. And this one has been a very critical, but somewhat under the radar, current event that has been taking place. There's an awful lot of trouble taking place in Libya. A civil war rages there that is going to be as critical as the one in Syria, but I think even more so. There are ISIS forces battling for control of the country, Al-Qaeda forces battling for control of the country. But right now, it appears as if the eventual winner is going to be the forces under Khalifa Haftar, who rules mostly in the east currently, has control of the Libyan oil fields, and is being supported by Russian troops who have taken up position just east of their stronghold, just over the border of Egypt. Mr. Haftar has spent many moments in conversation with Putin in Moscow and with his ambassadors in Libya. We know what Ezekiel 38 has to say about this country. We know that Daniel 11 says they are destined to join in the standing of the great image that Nebuchadnezzar saw, to be a part of the Gogian Confederacy. And who is it that is making ties right now with the eventual leader of this country but Mr. Putin? The United States does not have the stomach right now to get involved in Libya because of what happened in Benghazi. And I think that was a current event in itself that maybe seemed like it didn't have any long-range plan or play involved here. But I think it has helped set the stage for turning this country into a position where they don't want anything to do with that. You know, does any politician want to get involved in that controversy again? In this country? The door opened wide for Mr. Putin. Indeed, the United States, true to its form, opened the door wide for Putin throughout the entire Middle East when they, number one, they killed Gaddafi, got him out of the way, as well as Hussein. Boy, I'm having a pre-senior moment of the dictator we ran out of Iraq. This is where I should write every note down. And I always said one day not writing every note down has come to bite me, and in my pre-senior moment it's gotten me because I can't remember his first name to save my life. Saddam Hussein, why couldn't I say thank you? The United States has set the stage, I think, an awful lot for this, and Putin has walked right through the door. He's seen his opportunity and he has seized it. We're seeing Gog. He is just setting the stage. What a sly man Putin has been. Let's talk about Egypt as well. There's a lot going on there. I could have added a lot of notes here. There's a lot that I could have added in here. Boy, y'all can't read that, can you? Pretty top. I can't even read it here. So let's think about what's going on in Egypt. The first country in the Middle East to make peace with Israel. Israel always thought many would follow after Egypt. Hasn't quite happened. They were convinced Lebanon would be the second country. Hasn't quite happened. Not officially. But in the last few years, we are seeing a lot of change that is taking place here. Daniel chapter 11 makes it very clear. Makes it very clear that Egypt is not going to escape the invasion of the king of the north. Indeed, unwittingly, they are allowing the bear in the front door themselves. Egypt has been in a battle against ISIS currently in the Sinai Peninsula. How many of y'all go to Debka.com and read stuff? I know Brother Aaron does all the time. I know some of you. Go to Debka and read this article. I thought it was a really good one. And in fact, I picked it off the website as Deb was driving on Saturday. Well, in the Sinai Peninsula, ISIS is becoming a real issue. Not only has Egypt been involved recently in destroying Hezbollah tunnels into Gaza, they're trying to stop that smuggling that has been going on there. There's been a lot of money involved in that. Hamas has been getting quite wealthy off all that smuggling, and Egypt's been trying to put a stop to it. You know, this is a country that Isaiah 19 clearly tells us is going to be set against itself. We saw some of that in the Arab Spring, and I think we're destined to see more of it. What is happening right now as the U.S., let me phrase it this way, as long as Obama was the president, I think Putin saw the road easy to keep the stalemate going on in Syria. It was to his advantage. It's getting him more and more time to get him set up. But now that Trump's come into office and there's a little bit more push by U.S. forces, you know, throughout Iraq in defeating the ISIS forces in Iraq, what's happening to many of those ISIS soldiers? Where are they going? What was that? They're going into the Sinai Peninsula. They're going into Lebanon a little bit too. They're coming towards the Golan a little bit. But primarily, many of the leadership forces have been going into the Sinai Peninsula. And there has been a number of battles between the Egyptian forces and ISIS there to overcome this particular threat. I think this is another situation that bears our attention. I'm looking at my time getting close, and I'm not going to read through Isaiah 19. Look at that later. Let me give you a moment of speculation. Brother Lou was talking about this. I think it was Brother Lou. The Moab bomb that we dropped in Afghanistan within the last 2 weeks. A lot of money to kill just a few people. It almost seems like a waste of time, doesn't it? Because they're still fighting. Was it a waste of time? Or was it one general seeing his opportunity? Well, I need to see if this bomb can work at all because we need to use this in the Sinai. Because ISIS is really pouring into these caves and Egypt has been repelled at every attempt. They have gone into these Sinai caves to try to get the ISIS fighters out. And ISIS has been winning the day. The Bedouins in Sinai have been joining with ISIS in repelling the Egyptian forces. They don't want them out of there. Was this somebody's way of saying, well, let's see how good this bomb works. We might need it. I think so. Let's talk about one more item that's on the horizon. Donald Trump has made it clear that he wants to be the man that finally settles the Jerusalem issue. He has scheduled a peace conference for September of this year. He's charged his son-in-law. Yeah, it is kind of funny to look at. I mean, I thought that kind of, maybe I shouldn't have used that. Maybe it's a little too cute. But, you know, he thinks he can make any deal. You know, his son-in-law, who is Jewish himself, he's put him in charge of this. We want to settle this issue. You know, what's to come with all of this? Will it bring to the forefront an issue that seems to have been died down a little bit? How do you think Benjamin Netanyahu feels about this? You think he might be telling Donald Trump when they're on the phone together, you know, things were getting pretty good for us over here politically with our Arab neighbors, and you're stirring up the pot, Donald. Leave it alone. We certainly have a lot of things that are taking place that are interesting here. But I'm stopping at this point for something very important that I want to just talk about. We've seen a lot of things happening. There's a lot of turmoil. We seem to be on the edge of Armageddon. But we are on the edge. The pieces, I think, really are being put in place, but there's still something very important that has to happen. I know I've got this on the overhead, but you might want to turn to it also. Malachi, chapter 4, verse 5. Notice the paragraph mark denoting a new subject. Behold, I will send you Elijah the prophet. When? Before the coming of the great and dreadful day of Yahweh. And he shall turn the heart of the fathers to the children, and the heart of the children to their fathers, lest I come and smite the earth with a curse. We see so much happening in current events, and I probably didn't talk about half the things that have been going through your own minds. There's that much happening in the world today. With all of that that's going on, isn't it painfully obvious? Maybe I should have chosen a different adjective. Joyfully obvious to each and every one of us that the resurrection has to be any moment. Any moment. Because Malachi clearly says that Elijah will be sent before the coming of the great and dreadful day of Yahweh. Before Israel becomes thin and waxes thin, and his glory waxes thin, as we read about earlier in Isaiah. When you see these things begin to come to pass, then look up and lift up your heads, for your redemption draweth nigh. And brethren, I think our redemption is so close. So close. Each and every one of us need to be prepared. We'll stop there.